Well, tonight we're sort of looking at what faith, active faith, really does. And so we want to read a portion of 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we'll begin in the 37th verse for our reading tonight. David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them." And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a script, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew nigh unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, "Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field." Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee. And I will give the carcasses of the hosts of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Sheer Ramon, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. Well, if you notice, in the latter part of verse 51, we can get a lesson here that can help us. It says, when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. Now, that was not the bargain that they made. If you go back to the 8th and 9th verse of this chapter, the Philistines made the bargain that if you kill Goliath, we'll serve you. Well, they didn't keep it, did they? They took off. They were not about to become the servants of Israel. So I think there's something to learn here a little bit about who we trust, and that is we must not put confidence or commit ourselves to those who would do us wrong to start with. If somebody wants to do you wrong to start with, and then you get into a situation where they want to make some sort of compromise or some sort of condition, they would only do that if they feel they can get an advantage. So we have to watch out in these areas. Christ said, "Be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove." In Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 4, I don't have this verse committed to memory, Don't have that much room up there anymore, but here in Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 4, it says, "Take ye heed every one of his neighbor, and trust ye not in any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanders." If people will be untrue to God, then that's a pretty good warning sign that you must not feel like they're going to be true to you either. There's always that possibility if a person is not true to God that they won't be true to you. So we have to sort of, you know, put some caution out there and to learn. Opposition, also going back to our text in 1 Samuel 17, the opposition was very bold when they felt they had a champion. And so therefore they could, talk pretty big about it. And this champion, as you notice back in the fourth verse, he was only 6 cubits and a span tall. So he was just about as tall as the ceiling is here. He's pretty big guy. And down in verses 10 and 11, he defies the armies of Israel and said, "Give me a man, and we'll fight, and we'll see who wins." Well, that's not exactly a level playing field, is it? And so you can see that opposition will be very bold when it thinks that it has everything on its side, and it thinks that it has a cause on its side. But I think we have to recognize this about human nature. Human nature is naturally rebellious, and that's something we're born with. It started by rebelling against God in the Garden of Eden. God had made Adam and Eve perfect, given them a perfect paradise to live in, and they rebelled against God. This also reached a point where there was nothing left for God to do but to destroy the human race in Genesis chapter 6. They had rebelled to that extent. So that's why you often see people pile on when there is a rebellious cause. One person might get in a rebellious frame of mind and others will pile on to that. And in the Lord's work, the only way to prevent that is self-denial. We know that self-denial is something we have to have no matter what we do. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter and verse 17, and I just bring this out because it's a part of the overall picture of God's work and how that human nature can be on the wrong side. But here in Hebrews 13:17, "Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you." The opposite of that would be to want to challenge and want to find an issue to rise up against. Well, no matter what people might think about it, verse 17 along with verse 7 is the order of the kingdom of God. And you can't have a rebellion working against that. It cannot be. There has to be another means in which that things are brought to a resolution. In James chapter 4 and verse 6 and 7, in James 4, 6 and 7, it says, "But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God." So God warns us about self-determination and self-rule, and that has to be laid aside in order to give way to childlike faith in following the Word of God. Hebrews 11:6 tells us that without faith it is impossible to please God, because he that cometh to him must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. In John chapter 2 and verse 5, the mother of Christ said, "Whatsoever he saith, just do it. Do it." In Luke chapter 5 and verse 5, when the Lord had told Peter to launch out into the deep for a great draught of fish, Peter said, "We have fished all night, and there's nothing out there." But he said, "Nevertheless, at thy word, I will do it." And of course, he had a great catch as a result of that. In 1 Peter chapter 5, in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5, it says, "Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you." So we don't have to employ rebellion. You don't have to do that. God says submission works. And he said it prevents conflict, and it rather seeks truth and understanding. If you're rebelling, the only thing you will accept are the things that strengthen your rebellion. But if you are in submission, you will look for a good understanding of things, and you'll want to know what is really the way it should be. Every justice system is supposed to honor that a person is to be presumed to be innocent until they're proven guilty. And so in the Lord's work, we know that we have to be even more cautious because of what the devil can do. So rumors and stories that somebody might tell, accusations, suppositions. Sometimes people put a couple of things together and they come up with a scenario. Well, that cannot be the rule of thumb that we go by, and it is certainly not a proof of guilt. In Joshua 22, you have the account of the altar of Ed. We're not going back and read that because we studied it several weeks ago. And how that just looking at things with a suspicious frame of mind concluded that 2.5 tribes had rebelled against Israel. And boy, they were ready to go to war. So there was supposition, there was rumors, there was a story. But when they really got down to understanding what had happened, they could see it wasn't that way at all. And they could see that things were really the way they should be. So understanding rather than to become of a rebellious spirit. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 19, 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 19, it says, "Against an elder receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses." Now, this I think has to be a part of the picture again, because so many church problems can be that people get something going in their mind that they think the preacher is not doing his job. And then it just keeps rolling. And it gathers speed. God says, don't let that happen. If there is an issue, then you find out the facts. And you take somebody with you and you find out what the facts are. That's a commandment. That is not just a suggestion. That's the way it's supposed to be done. So we cannot form conclusions until we know all the facts in the Lord's work. It's so important. In James chapter 4, and there in verse 11, in James chapter 4 and verse 11, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother, speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another?" And then down in verse 9 of chapter 5 of James, "Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door." So when we reach a conclusion based on bits and pieces of things that we think, the problem doesn't stop there. Because what that will produce is negative feelings now. So you have a conclusion, not based on all the facts, but it will then produce negative feelings. And so when you get negative feelings going, everything can get out of kilter altogether. And so it becomes a larger problem than what the issue is itself. So we must never discount the part that human nature can play if it is not being denied. And God says we have to deny it. I think an example of this is back in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And this probably to us sounds silly, but yet it was a big deal in the church. In 1 Corinthians 1:11, it has been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you. So they weren't all on the same page. They had back and forth, back and forth. For this I say, that every one of you saith, I am of Paul, and I of Apollos, and I of Cephas, and I of Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you, or were you baptized in the name of Paul? So it's not a matter of what the issues are. It's a matter that self-denial unto submission is the only way to prevent contentions. And back in verse 10, he says, I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and the same judgment. That only comes by seeking understanding. That certainly does not come by contending for what we might think and not have the full story. So that's when we're overcoming spiritually, when we're after the same mind and we want to have a full understanding. Now, this kind of brings us to our thought tonight, accepting responsibility. And in Ephesians chapter 4, this is a responsibility that we have to accept. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. So that's my responsibility. That's your responsibility, to endeavor to keep the unity in the bond of peace. So the champion, when he thought he thought things were on his side, well, he was very bold. But that was not the end of the story. Because we know that his opposition was on the wrong premise. Going back to our text in 1 Samuel 17 and verse 40, I want us to notice this. It says, he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. Now, we've already pointed out that this Philistine was about 10 feet tall. And so when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. What on earth was David thinking? You know, you might ask that question. Just a young guy going out against a giant? What on earth? Was he just a mindless daredevil? Or did he have other reasons that motivated him? I believe he had to have some pretty strong motivation in order to do that. And I believe David could see his smallness in comparison to the giant's largeness, the same as a giant could see his largeness in comparison to David's smallness. I don't think David was blind to that. And probably, if you want to think about anxiety, there would be a lot of anxiety on David's part, but none on the part of the giant, as they would measure things out. Now, when you think about this story, a mistake can be made if we just assume that David was some one-of-a-kind, unique person, and that nobody else would ever do this, and that nobody else would ever have an experience like this. In 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 8 and 9. In 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 8 and 9, it says, "Now therefore, so shalt thou say unto my servant David, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheepcote, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people, over Israel." Now this is God telling David, "I brought you out of just being a plain, simple farmer, watching the sheep. And I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest, and have cut off all thine enemies out of thy sight, and have made thee a great name, like unto the name of the great men that are in the earth." God says, "I did it. I was with you. I made this happen." It never was about that David was some Superman. Never was about that. Even when he went up unto the giant, it was all about what God did for him, as he would be given over by faith to do God's will. So this is what David pointed out to the giant before he cut his head off. In verse 46 of 1 Samuel 17, he told the giant, "This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee." He didn't say, "I'm so great, I can defeat you." But he said, the Lord is going to deliver you. But here's something to think about. Even though it was a God-given victory, who had to go up against the giant? David did. Who had to throw the stone? David did. And who had to sever the giant's head from his body? David did. So it was a God-given victory, but David had to do his part. He had to do his part. We know it was God blessing David and his efforts, but still, David had to put forth the efforts for that to happen. So it was not that David was some Superman, because we read about in the 38th and 39th verse, he was not even capable, because of a lack of training and growth, to wear a suit of armor. He was not up to speed on that. And back in verse 33, Saul said, "David, you're not able to do this. You're not even a mature man yet. How in the world do you think that you can go up against a guy like that?" So that's not what it was at all. And David, as you look back to the 14th down through the 19th verse, he was even too young to be in the army. His older brothers were in the army, but David wasn't yet of the age to where he could serve in the army. So there's no question that it was David's faith that enabled him to put forth the effort. As you see in verse 37, David said, "The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the bear and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." That is absolute fact. It was David's faith that enabled him to go out and face that giant. But where did he get that faith? Well, he didn't get it from reading a book. I'm talking about, there's a ton of books out here that you can order, and so-and-so can tell you how that you can have a victorious Christian life and all of that. And it wasn't because he had watched somebody else and had received so much inspiration from watching them, and he said, "I want to do that." That wasn't where it came from. But in verse 34, when David explained where his faith was coming from, he said in verse 34, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep. There came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and his uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." So where did this faith come from that David had? It came from his own daily experience. His own daily experience and the life's choices that he had made. In Luke chapter 16, in Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, Christ said this, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." So what had happened with David, he had been very much into walking with God when there was nothing but animals around him. And that's all he had was animals around him. Yet he was so much keyed into God that God was giving him personal victories on that level. And it wasn't that he had gone somewhere and heard a great motivational speaker and that had moved him to become a giant killer. No, that's not where it came from at all. And so his faith was an outgrowth of having been faithful in all the details of his life. Now, I don't always like to use myself as an example, but this is a true example. You've heard the story when I was in the first grade, and we were poor people. I didn't know it at the time because it didn't matter. I had clothes on, had food to eat, and so that was all I needed. But at school, they had a deal where you could donate a nickel. Now, a nickel back then was probably worth a dollar now. I mean, that's how much things have changed. And if you donated that, they would give you a little fireman's cap. It was about that big around and red and had a rubber band on it. And boy, that was big, you know, fireman's cap. And so I didn't have a nickel, but I wanted a fireman's cap. And so I happened to just notice on the kitchen table there was a nickel. It wasn't mine, but I thought, So I took the nickel and I donated it. And I got a fireman's cap. And of course, I was proud of that. I had it on a school bus. And here comes my older sister. "Where did you get the nickel to buy that fireman's cap?" Well, we got home the same thing. "Where did he get that nickel?" So I had to confess. And boy, I tell you, Mom made a big deal out of that. You don't take something that's not yours. That's the same as stealing. And she hammered that. And I'll tell you, that's just as clear in my mind today as if it was happening right now. That little thing of being faithful in a little thing stayed with me. And it was something that when something bigger came along, that came back. That came back. He that's faithful in the least is faithful also in much. I want to go to and just bring this in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7. Now, this is a qualification for a pastor. 1 Timothy 3:7. "Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil." What's it talking about? It's talking about that a person's real qualification is developed by what they do on their own. What they do on their own, that's going to build their character. If they on their own do the things that are right, then when it comes to having their responsibility that's beyond what's their own, they'll still do things right. But if they won't do the things that are right on their own, when they're all by themselves, that means that when responsibility comes upon them, they probably will break down and break over and not do it right either. That's why it's so important, the little things. The little things. You that have young children, don't overlook the little things, because the little things are what contribute to the big things. And so we need to make sure that we get them right. So, a good report, and that is what the person has done on their own, and how that they are programmed in their mind and in their heart and in their faith. Now I want to go back again to our text in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Here in the 26th verse, David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And then in verse 32, David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." David's faith was about accepting responsibility. And that's what I really, everything that I've said thus far is about that. Our faith has got to be about accepting responsibility to do what needs to be done. I'm sure all Israel believed that the giant should be killed. I don't think there were, if you were to interview anybody, do you think we ought to let the giant have his way? No. We need to get rid of that guy. I believe everybody believed that. But nobody would step forward to defeat him. They all believed it, but they would not accept their responsibility. Another thing about David, in accepting their responsibility to do what needed to be done, he did not complain about all the other people that are not doing what needs to be done. You don't find him out here talking and jawing about, "Well, where's all these big soldiers? How come they're not out here?" You don't find him doing that. You don't find that he was pointing out the faults of others. You don't find that he was criticizing the leadership, Saul. He wasn't doing that. David's faith avoided contention and strife. He rather focused on what needed to be done, and then he accepted the responsibility to do it. He didn't come out and see that no one in the army was fighting the giant and then just throw up his hands and say, "Well, that's the way it is, I'm going home." He didn't do that. David's faith saw what needed to be done, and David's faith anointed him to do it. And I believe that's what faith does. You know, there's a whole lot of other things that can happen. But James chapter 2 and verse 17 says, "Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone." So if my faith doesn't see what needs to be done, if my faith does not accept the responsibility to do what needs to be done, my faith isn't doing much for me, it's not doing much for anybody else, and it's not doing anything for the Lord. That's why God says that faith without works is dead. There's no blessings. There's no rewards for just knowing that the giant ought to be killed. It's only when a person says, "I'll go and I'll do it. I'll do it." So let us all seek for a faith that will work for the Lord. And that's our responsibility. May we bow our heads for prayer. Father, we do thank you for your word tonight and for the examples that are given. We know that you have great things in store, such as you did for David. To those who are honest with you, who are given over to you, and who seek to be found faithful to you, I pray that you'll all help us, that you'll help all of us to realize that we have a part. And that part is not to point out the faults of others, but it's to realize what needs to be done and then to undertake to do it, to feel like that that's our responsibility. I know that this is what you will bless. So I pray for any choice and decision that needs to be made tonight, and you know what it is, and as your Spirit would deal with hearts, I pray that there would be that made by faith, for we ask it in Jesus' name.